Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am Jonah, joined as always by my co-host Ben.
Hello, hello.
And today we are full from Thanksgiving. How was your Thanksgiving, Ben?
It was good. Probably about as good as yours was, I guess.
Why don't you tell everyone what we did on Thanksgiving?
We met up. So since we'd been playing games together for at least a month now in person, we decided to have Thanksgiving together because I was not going to travel down to Florida to have Thanksgiving with my family. So we had Thanksgiving together, and we started out the day. I got there around noon, and we started out the day. I'm super forgetful, but we played an early game of Pandemic Legacy Season Zero. And again, still, I mean, there's not much to say each week about it, but it was a good time. I'm still really enjoying it.
I have stuff to say about it, which we'll talk about shortly.
I think you mentioned a few things as we were playing that might be different than what you're going to talk about, but I remember you mentioning things about like the missions that pop up throughout the months and being different than the other pandemics a little bit, which again, I wouldn't know yet, but I do plan to try and play the other ones now that I've played this. And then we, while baking some things, we went out for a walk. I met your grandmother.
So that was fun. The bridge player.
Yes, the bridge player. She asked about me playing bridge, and I said that I'd never played bridge before. And then we had a good Thanksgiving. You made some slow cooker brisket.
Yeah, that was great.
I brought over what apparently is the most interesting stuffing you've ever seen, even though to me it's just normal stuffing. It is a challah-based stuffing, and my dad makes it into like bricks, and I guess that's weird. I don't know. It's not weird to me. But it looks like, I mean, I wouldn't call them bricks, but it's like you make it in a casserole dish, so it comes out like a casserole. And then
I mean, it was delicious. I enjoyed the bricks of challah stuffing, but
oh yeah, it's
strange.
So just a quick background. My family, we don't like, and I'm going to get laughed at, but I call it chunk turkey. So like big chunks of turkey, like you would see, like when you actually carve a turkey, we don't really like that. We find it too dry, and it could just be how we cooked it, or I don't know, but we like sliced, like deli cut sliced turkey. So
for Thanksgiving, you all get together and you stack up all these slices of turkey in the shape of a cooked turkey. And you carve into that.
No, we do what we call turkey roll-ups. So we take some of this deli cut turkey and we take these bricks of stuffing and we roll the deli cut turkey around the stuffing and then smother it in gravy and bake it.
Sounds really good.
It is. It's really good. And if I had the foresight and decency to go get sliced turkey, I would have made it, but I did not. So I just brought the stuffing bricks. And then Patrick made this delicious corn casserole one time when we were having a Thanksgiving time game night at his dome way back when in the before times. And I got the recipe from him. So I made some of that. And I really like it. It's really good. Very easy to make. And then we made some salads and some mashed potatoes, because I guess it's not Thanksgiving without mashed potatoes.
Of course.
And then we played Pandemic again the next month in the game. And then you made an apple pie, and we ate the apple pie.
That's right. We also played a quick round of Village Pillage, didn't we?
Yes, we did, in the middle there. I knew I was forgetting something, and I don't know how I forgot it, but yes, we played a quick round or two of Village Pillage, and I always like Village Pillage. I think it's a nice, quick, easy game, and it's easy to take with you and bring places, so it's the ideal portable game, for me at least. So.
Yeah, that's good. I only played it at three, and we've said before that three is the ideal player count because you only deal with the people to your left and right in the game.
Yes.
But as far as Pandemic Legacy, the thoughts that I have that are spoiler-free for anyone concerned, I think that they are going a little too hard on the legacy aspect and just really trying to throw as much as possible into the game, to the point where we are now, I think it's starting to get a little fiddly. You know, we, in all the other, all, both, in both of the other Pandemic Legacies, as the game goes on, you'll like find more rules and add more stickers to the rule book, so you have more things to do, different types of actions that you can take. And, you know, that's what happens in this one as well. But I think they're just kind of different enough that it makes it hard to keep track of them, especially with the changing missions. So what Ben mentioned before is one thing I like in the other Pandemic Legacy games, if my memory is correct. I mean, it was a couple of years ago that I played Season 2. Let's say in March you have 2 missions, and then in April you'll have 3. You'll still have those 2 from March in April, so you still have some experience completing these missions. And then after April is May, and you'll slot out one of the old missions and get one new one. So you kind of have this rotating set of missions where you always have something you've done and seen before and kind of know how to attack the goal, but also something new to keep it fresh each month. And in this one, it's totally new missions every single month. And I am not that fond of it. It feels a little bit like Whiplash every month, because, you know, you get this done and then, oh, well, we're trying to do this. And then, oh, now we're trying to do that. It's like, okay, let's have a cohesive plan for a month or two and then change it up.
So my thoughts, as somebody who's never played another Pandemic game at all, to me, and I'm going to try and be as non-spoilery as possible.
It's tough. I was being very vague.
It feels like, I can see exactly where you're coming from. And to me, it feels like we are now at a point where you could split what we're doing into 3 separate base Pandemic games.
Right.
But we're doing it all at once.
Yeah, I think that feeling is what made me think it was fiddly, because we had, in this last month, we had 3 missions that were totally different goals. And it was kind of hard to take an action that moves you towards all 3 of them. Like, there are very few things that you can do that aren't only shooting for one of those goals.
Yeah, it feels like some of the missions that they throw in are like, it's a little tug of war. Like, it's like you do this at the expense of this.
Right.
And it doesn't feel like the missions that you're going for are always cohesive in terms of like where you're trying to go in that specific month.
Right. Like, why are these 3 grouped together now if it's so hard to do this one and that one at the same time?
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing, and this is not a spoiler at all, in Pandemic Legacy Season 0, you will have teams. And a team is just a car that drives around the map. And each city has a certain affiliation. It's either, Allied, Neutral, or Soviet, I think.
Yep.
And a team has an allegiance, affiliation.
Yeah,
a team has an affiliation, and they can only do stuff in that type of city. So making a team tends to be a good thing, because these different missions require actions that require teams. But what's really tricky is when you have one action or one mission that you're going for that needs like 4 teams. And of those 4 teams, none of them are the type that another mission wants. So even going for a team, which is good, you have to pick which team to go for. And all of that is happening while you're balancing, keeping track of all of the Soviet agents showing up on the board and trying not to have the game end from a few other conditions. So I think my current want for this game is for the missions to not feel as tug of war as they do now.
You know my current want for this, because I've said it about 4 times while we've been playing the recent missions, and that would be a spoiler, so I will not say it at all, but it does involve teams. But that's my current want, just because I have not had that experience that you've had, so I don't know what the other ones are like. I see where you're coming from. It's not a huge deal to me, but I think where the way that they're making it so difficult to like hit all of them at once, I think if we had what I've wanted for the last couple games, it would make it so much easier.
Right, but if that's not even a mechanic that's in the game.
Exactly, then... but for all we know, it might be. And like right. The next month or something, they might add a rule that adds what I'm looking for. I just find what you're saying is even more accurate without what I'm looking for, which is
hopefully
a very roundabout.
Everyone's understanding this obtuse.
Yeah, which is a very roundabout way of saying that I want something mechanically added to the game and you want more mission code.
Right.
So
another thing that I think hasn't really helped is this last month we got a mission that required us to do something that we have not done in, I think, 3 or 4 months. And
you're going to have to text me what that one is, because I don't remember.
The thing that was in Johannesburg the first time, and now it was in Los Angeles this time.
Yes.
That thing we did not deal with for a few months.
That thing is also a pain in the ass, so. Ooh.
Right.
I said a word.
Oh, it's PG-13 today.
Oh boy, apologies. My emotions got the best of me.
But yeah, not having that mission for a few months made me forget how that mechanic even worked in the game, because we just hadn't seen it. And that's part of the fiddliness and too much in the game that I'm thinking.
Yep, that one, yeah. I see exactly where you're coming from, and I do agree. I'd like to play the other ones, just to see if I agree, like, if it changes things for me, how I'm thinking about this one. But this is still my favorite of, like, the two Legacy games I've played.
Yeah, and you can play them in numerical and chronological order.
Yes.
Because it's 0-1-2.
Yes.
Even though they were released 1-2-0.
Ideally, and I've mentioned this before, ideally I would be able to play this game like with my brother, and I could be like, hey, you want to play Pandemic Legacy, blah blah blah, because like it's a set game that we could progress through and he might find that neat. But at the same time, I also know that he doesn't like cooperative games very much, because he likes attacking me. So I'd have to find somebody to play, and then I'm back to the same issue that I had when I first wanted to try them. But mm-hmm. I'll figure it out. It'll happen.
I believe in you.
Did you play anything else this week?
Trying to think. I don't think I did. I am playing a game of Oath after this, and I'll have an interesting report on that next week, hopefully. But no, that's it for the week.
Nice. I played a 3-player game of Azul.
Oh, I didn't even know you played another game.
Yeah, I finally got
so rude over here.
So, I got Jared to try it. Jared is my brother. I don't think I mentioned his name before. I whooped him. Felt really good. Really good.
What was the score?
Let me pull it up. Give me one moment.
And you said it was a 3-player game?
Yes. But I was mostly concentrating on beating Jared. That's how it goes. My play. I had 79 points.
Jared, that's a good score.
Jared had 43.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it was. I had 2 columns. So in the last turn, I completed 2 columns along with my rows. So
that's plus 14, isn't it?
Yeah, so I had a nice 14-point bonus in the last turn.
That's huge. So, yeah. I'm just looking at my app now. One thing I really like about BG Stats, the app that we use to track our plays, is it will tell you your wins, your win percentage, the number of plays, your average, your best. I like seeing my average score on a game that I've played a bunch of times, because then even if I don't win, not that that matters a lot to me, but I can feel good about maybe doing better than I normally do. So looking at Azul, I have played Azul a staggering number of times, 33 times apparently, and my average score is 58.39 with a best score of 105.
That's pretty good.
And that score of 105, I can guarantee, did not happen on the backside.
What's your win percentage on your app? While we're on the app, because I'm looking too, I have a win percentage for you when you've played with me of 46%. And if you can guess what my win percentage is, I will.
Is that per game or per or for everything?
If you hit overview and then you hit insights, it should show all of the players, and then that little percentage is the win percentage.
I'll have to look into this later, because when I hit insights, it shows me the games, not the people.
It says games, and then to the right of games, it says players. The little tab right above the games.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
My win percentage is 37% on my app.
But you have a 46% win percentage when you play against me. Play with me. What do you think my win percentage is?
Not high.
It's 28%.
It's a lot better than on my app. Yours is 11% in games with me.
That sounds about right. So, but I think a lot of those wins come from me playing the game Checkers 2000, which is probably I think I'm 100% win percentage in that game, because I play my family and I whoop on them so bad. So if anyone wants to take me in what I lovingly call Millennium Checkers, let's do it. But yeah, my win percentage is garbage, and we know that, but confirmed it's absolutely garbage when I play with you.
So. Well, why don't we switch over to the game of the week, which I think you have a higher win percentage in. I remember there's a specific play I'm thinking of this game. So anyway, why don't you tell us all what it is?
I think I know what you're talking about. So our game of the week this week, interestingly enough, and it's going to sound more interesting when we talk about like our topic of the week, because you've heard me talk about this before, but our game of the week is Scythe. Scythe.
I was going to say, as some people say, Scythe.
I say Scythe because...
So do I.
I don't know why you would make it a noise at the end, but people do. So I say Scythe. It is... it's a tricky one for me. And I'm just going to say what our topic of the week is, just so that people can kind of understand a little more why I'm saying it this way. Our topic of the week is games that we think are just okay. And for a long time, Scythe was like the top game for me. And first, before I go into like why it's dropping a little bit, the game itself is the base game is a one to five player game. With an expansion, it can go up to seven. And they described it as a 4X game, which is explore, expand, exterminate, and
exploit. It's a type of game that is rooted in colonialism.
Yes, for sure. But it's heavily debated whether that's even the case for this game, because there's not really much of all those 4Xs in this game. There's not much extermination. It's more of just a area control game when you get down to it. But basically, you are these leaders of various nations, and you are in a 1920s adjacent universe where there are gigantic mechs that you can walk around the map with that can fight. And you are the leader of one of these factions, and you're trying to move like farmers or workers, as they're called in the game, but they're really just farmers. You're moving these workers around the map, and you're using this neat mechanic where you have an action board that has top row and bottom row actions. And on each turn, you move an action pawn amongst each of the four sections of your board. And each of those four sections has one top row, one bottom row. And it's different. It's different based on what player mat you take. So there's like an industrial player mat or a patriotic player mat. And they have the same actions overall, but they have
different groupings, orders. Right?
Yeah, they're different groupings, and also potentially different rewards. So like the patriotic might give you less coins for doing one action, where the industrial might give you more coins for doing one. And it's, I think that's really neat. It does give like a little bit of replayability, because at the beginning of the game, it is a random selection of nation and player mat. But overall, you pretty much have the same set of actions that you can do throughout the game. And you are basically just going around trying to collect resources, gain popularity by doing various actions, and gaining money, which is the victory point condition in this game. Along the way, you can fight. There's not as much combat as they would make you think by calling it a 4X game, but you can fight. Typically, fighting will make you lose popularity, which is why it's somewhat avoided. But what they try and make interesting about this game is that they say, and I think we mentioned this in our shared economy episode, is resources are spent from the board. So you never own resources. So everything you produce, be it oil, metal,
honey,
food, which looks, when you look at it, it just looks like a bag of gold. And then, what was the last one? More workers, I think. So workers are really the only thing that you quote own. Everything else just sits on the board and moves around with your characters. And should you be attacked in a region with resources and defeated, those resources now belong to the other person because they control that space on the board. And that, I think, is where they were trying to differentiate this game from like a few others, because you don't actually have the resources personally. So now I want to kind of get into why this one is getting just kind of more okay for me as, you know, we go along. Especially now with everything going on, I don't have many high player count games that I can play. And this one is 100% a high player count game. I've tried it at 2, I've tried it at 3, and it's just okay. It's not my preference. There's too much open space, and that was like the big one for me, at least right now, is just, it feels like a high player count game that I can't really play so much right now. But at the same time, I just think it tries to do so many things, and while it does them all decently, I don't think it stands out now that I've played similar things. I don't think it stands out in as incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say that I have a lot of positive things to say about this game. Like you just said, production value. I think Scythe has maybe the nicest board that you'll ever see in the hobby. It is just a really beautiful work of art. I mean, it's just really nicely done. It looks great. It is quite readable as well. You know, you have these hexes throughout the map, but you mostly see the nice art behind it, but it's perfectly readable. The player boards have double layers. The player boards in this game are double layered player boards, which means if you have to put something in a spot, that little spot is recessed to make it easier to put there, and so it doesn't move.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think this was like the first, not right, the that's first what I was gonna to say. Do it, but I think it was like the first big popular game to do it, to the point where now everybody's like, does it have Scythe player boards type of deal? Like when it talks about double layers.
So Scythe, like you just said, you know, it really brought this to the hobby. Tons of games have this now, and they have it because of Scythe. I firmly believe that Scythe is the reason that that is so prevalent in the hobby. So Scythe, the art looks fantastic. The components are really good. The action selection is kind of neat, but the gameplay is where I feel it is lacking. And unfortunately, I do play these games for the gameplay, not just to look at. That being said, Scythe has done really, really well. And I think it is because of how nice it looks. Because people are so happy to bling their games that if you can get one that already looks nice when you buy it, it's going to be a lot easier to get it to the table, and you're probably going to play it more often. This is not to say that it is a bad game. It, I just think, is not as interesting as some others, and it is, I think, purchased more for its looks than its gameplay.
And I can say that was what drew me in. So this was the first, the very first, I'm going to call them hobby games. I don't really know what, I mean, classic games would be like Monopoly, Life,
Scrabble.
Scrabble. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, those types of games. The first non-game like that that I purchased ever was Takenoko. And I bought it while playing at a board game shop in college. And I bought it while we were playing it. I really liked it. But then I took a break from like really being into board games for like 3 years. And one day my friend was like, "Hey, you want to play a board game?" And I'm like, "Sure." And we played like some classic games, like the ones I had just mentioned before. But then I was like, "Oh, you know what? I really do like board games." And I was looking for something to do. And just a quick search online of board games, somehow Scythe popped up, and it was like beautiful, and it like drew me in, and I watched like so many watch it played videos, I watched playthroughs, and I decided to buy it. But the reason that I even looked at it in the first place was because of the visuals. Like, visually it drew me into the game. So I 100% agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very long-winded story about how I agreed with you, but
that's fine. That's what this is for. It looks great. I don't think it plays great. There was a time that we played it, and Ben, I think you got second place by like under 5 points. All yeah. I know is that you didn't win. And the reason that that is remarkable is that you were doing something by yourself in a corner of the map, and we were all sure that you were going to win very handily. And I didn't like the fact that one person in this game that claims to be a 4X, where you need to explore and expand, I don't like how one person can just sit in their little corner with their faction and churn out points, not interacting with anyone else, not caring what anyone else does. It feels wrong that someone can win without doing anything that involves anyone else at the table.
Yeah, the faction player board combination that I ended up with that game, I don't recall exactly what they were, but it was a really good combination of, I think when I produce, I get something extra was my faction power, and I really quickly rushed to an upgrade ability that gave me coins for producing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like basically just sitting in a corner in like 4 hexes out of a board of maybe like 40 or 50 hexes, and I was sitting in a corner of like 4 hexes and just producing as much as I could, and was just churning money out. And yeah, I was definitely close to winning. I didn't win, but I was close. And I actually agreed, but I was like, why would I change what I'm doing?
Oh, of course.
But I do agree. But yeah, I remember exactly.
I hate the game. You were doing what you were able to do in the rules of the game, and it turned me off of the game.
Yeah. So I think just while we're on this topic, especially because we're going to be getting into the topic of OK games, how are you defining like an OK game? Like, do you have a definition of OK that you're going by for your list?
Yeah, so we have played a lot of games, the two of us, and we also own some games. So when I was thinking about what defines an OK game, for me there were a few things. So the first thing is maybe obvious. I don't own it, and I don't want to own it. So for me, at least, if I think a game is just okay, then why should I buy it? The other thing that I was thinking, which is pretty similar, is after my first play, if I'm not interested in playing it again, it's definitely okay or bad, in my opinion. Of course, these are all opinions. tons of people love certain games that I don't love, and vice versa. But for me, an okay game is one that I don't own, I don't want to own, and after playing once, I, you know, could take it or leave it. How about you?
Yeah, similar, outside of the owning thing, because I'm a nutcase, and if a game looks nice, even if it's not great, I'm going to want to own it just to have it in a collection, because that's me. But the second part was pretty much my definition. So like the games I have on my list were games that I thought were fun as I was playing it, but there are games I'd rather play instead. Right. And I think the big defining factor for me is, like, if I play it, yeah, I'd maybe want to play it again, but I'm not going to be like really like looking to play it. Like, it's not one of those games where I'm sitting here thinking, oh man, I haven't played this in a while. Like, but because bad games are ones that I would never play again. But
right.
Okay games are ones where it's like, oh yeah, I'd play this, but I'm not sitting here thinking like, oh man, I really want to play this one again.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a couple of your okay games and maybe what was not interesting about them?
Yeah, so I think the one I'm going to start with is very similar to Scythe in terms of like the reasoning, especially your reasoning, and that's Dinosaur Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally, all I wrote, because I was going to basically refer back to my Scythe stuff, was it has a lot of flash, but not too much substance, is what I wrote.
Right, yeah, Dinosaur Island is basically neon Jurassic Park.
Yes, so it is a neon 90s themed game about building a Jurassic Park, essentially. And you're pulling like visitors out of your bag, and you're researching new dinosaurs to put in your park, and you want to grab these like upgrade cards that might give you various bonuses. And I think it's good, and I'd play it again, but I owned it. But it was one of those games where I think they went so hard into the production value and not so hard into the gameplay that it was just like, after playing it like four or five times, it was just like, okay, I mean, I roll some dice to see what kinds of DNA I can research, and then I produce some new dinosaurs and put them in a park, and then I pull visitors out of a bag and see if they get eaten or not. Mm-hmm. And that's the game. And it's neat. It's a fun, it's not a difficult game. So it's one that I would play to like introduce people to slightly more difficult games, because visually it's really cool. And the first player marker is a slap bracelet, which is always neat. but it was just okay. And that's why I sold it. Cause I didn't need to own it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I sell a game, that's usually kind of weird. So it's very hard for me to choose what games I'd like to sell.
Right. It's a notable thing for this.
Yeah. The next one is kind of a set, Mysterium and Obscurio.
Oh, I have a set of three that I'm going to mention. Go on though.
Oh, boy. Again, visually, I think the art in both of these games is great. But both times I've played each, I just kind of finished the game and went, oh, and that was my first reaction upon finishing both of these games. It doesn't feel like there's much to do. Someone is giving you these random hints, and you're trying to just basically look at a bunch of pictures on the board. And each round, all you do is just talk to. You're like, I really just didn't feel like there was a game to it. It's so, yeah, I guess it's more the activity side. Furio. They.
Right.
B fun to stop us from winning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what's the point of this traitor mechanism if we've already solved the game? Those are two. I have four on my list, and I'm thinking of others as we're talking. Mm-hmm. But let's see some of yours, and then we'll get back to me.
So I have a list. I checked it once.
I thought you were going to say checked it twice just to be festive, but we're both Jewish, so maybe not.
Here are three games that are on this list that are not targeted for this reason, but there is a common thread through these three games. And these three games are Scythe, Blood Rage, and Tapestry. So these three games are all by the same designer, I guess? Publisher?
Blood Rage is not, but
Blood Rage. Oh, right. Blood Rage isn't. Oh, yeah.
Blood Rage is Cool Mini or Not and Eric Lang. The other two are Stonemaier. But I think I know where you're going with this.
These three games, I feel, are 90% art and 10% game. And I don't think that a game should be 100% game and 0% art. You know, even tic-tac-toe is going to look nicer with colored pencils. But these three games are just skewed so heavily in the production value over gameplay. It's not that great for me. Blood Rage, I think, is neat, but uninspiring. I mean, it's cool to move the big minis around the map, but I find the gameplay a little lacking. Scythe, we talked about. Tapestry has some really cool player mats that are like, I don't know the term. They're like sandpaper, I guess I should say. They're like, what's the right grit?
They kind of feel like resume paper.
Yeah,
but like a just, like, thinner really resume paper. Yeah, I think they have. I mean, I know it's called like a linen finish, but they went like a really heavy linen finish, so it does have like a sandpapery texture.
Oh, I'm just talking about the ones you put the pieces on so they don't move. Right?
Yeah, they're all kind of similar. Okay. Yeah, I know that the little like crosshatch finish is called linen finish, but it's like they took that to like 11.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really grippy.
So Scythe and Tapestry, I both thought were okay. And for me, it's a really bad sign. And we talked about this before, but for me, it's a really bad sign if a game has like balance patches pushed out shortly after release. And, you know, there are tons of games that aren't perfect, but I think it's not great when the designer has to come out and say, oh, by the way, this is kind of broken. And if these people are in the game, you need to give someone else like a 30-point handicap because of it. So I didn't find the gameplay that interesting in any of those games, and that's why they were okay. Great to look at, not as much fun to play.
Me again?
Sure.
Okay. Mine I actually just came up with because what's interesting about this one is I want it, but, and I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, it's Barrage.
That was almost on my list. I was looking at it.
It literally just came to my list because, as I said when we talked about Barrage, I'd rather play Tricarion at a difficulty level of this magnitude, like a heaviness value of the game. I'd rather play Tricarion every time, but I still want Barrage. It's weird. Like, I want it, but I'd rather play Tricarion. So it like falls in that category of like, the game's okay, but I think it does some neat things that, given the chance to play it again, I would play it again, but there's other games that I would much rather play. And I think that the flow of water was really cool, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I thought it was just a little too heavy for what it was.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about I'd rather play this. You know, I thought Smartphone Inc. was neat and good, but it gets downgraded to okay because I would rather play Food Chain Magnate every time. You know, yeah. It feels exactly the same, so I would never choose it.
Yep. And I think it's weird that I still want it, but again, I think it does some neat things. It's just I'd rather play Tricarion. But on my list itself, and this is one that I don't know what brought it to mind, but we played Yellow and Yangtze with Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the first game I played where there was some set collection, but it was like your score was counted based on the lowest set you collected.
It's the first game to do that. And a lot of games do it because of that. Yeah.
Oh, look at me learning new things. And I thought that that was really neat. I think that's a neat mechanic. But the game itself, I thought was like, I enjoyed when we played it, but it mm-hmm. popped up in my feed somehow. And I was like, oh, I haven't thought about that one in a long time. And it was just like, okay. And there are other games I've played since that have that collection, but you count the least mechanism, that I think have a theme that I like more. Cause this was like, what, like old Chinese.
Right. Minor correction as well. I think Tigris and Euphrates is the actual first game that does that. Mm-hmm. But Tigris and Euphrates and Yellow and Yangtze are made by the same person. And Yellow and Yangtze is basically just a retheming and re-implementation of Tigris and Euphrates. Anyway.
So
they started it.
In a weird way, just for that specific mechanic, I would rather play The King is Dead.
Mm.
Because I thought The King is Dead was a really fun, quick game.
That's right. That does use the least mechanic, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, that's where that one got on my list from. This next one, I think you're going to find interesting, but I put Zombicide on my list.
Hmm.
As a minis lover, this specific game just has too much setup for what the game is, which is pretty common for minis heavy games. The setup takes a while because you have to like pick out and find all of the miniatures. But typically there's at least sometimes the ones that I own, I think, have some gameplay to them. But Zombicide is really just move guys around a map. It's a co-op game, but you just move these guys around a map and you just chuck dice trying to shoot zombies to complete your missions. And that's like the whole of Zombicide. So to me, it's like I spent 30 minutes getting this thing set up because you have to pick out all of these miniatures you need and place doors on the map and objective mm-hmm. tokens on the map. And all you do is draw cards and shoot zombies with dice. And it's like it's too much for like a couple of small things that you do in the game.
Mm-hmm. And Zombicide, you can have like 10 boxes of that, right?
Yes. So I backed Zombicide Green Horde. And the minis are beautiful. Like, cool mini or not, which is... they're always going to be CMON, but now they literally said, we're come on, which is like, come on and play. But like, it's so bad. So they're CMON. Yeah. They make really good minis. They make like some of the better They make some of the better one-piece minis that you don't need to assemble yourself in the industry. I mean, their name is literally Cool Mini or Not. It's what they're known for. And I backed Green Horde, which was one of the medieval style Zombicide games, because they have sci-fi, they have modern, normal, like present day, and they have medieval. And Green Horde had, I think, 10 or 11 boxes full of miniatures, and it was so much. I sold it mm-hmm. at PAX Unplugged, but it was so much. I had to bring in like a cart. Well, I didn't, but it basically fit in this guy's cart that bought it for me, and he like wheeled it away. It was nutty. So
that's too much.
Yeah, it was just too much setup for not enough game for that one.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to do a topic on that sometime. Games with the highest setup to play ratio that you're willing to play.
Mythic Battles Pantheon is absolutely top of the list. 100%. So.
Yeah, another game that I have. Oh, go on.
Nope, I was going to say that was my list, and now I'm coming up with more, but that was my pre-written list.
All right. Another game I have on my list is Concordia. Concordia is a really well-known, popular game that I used to own, but I just didn't find it as interesting as I thought I did. It has some cool stuff going on in it with the buying of more cards and the way the scoring works. But at the end of the day, it's just another trading in the Mediterranean game for me. So I moved on from it. Then next, I have Whistle Stop, Whistle Stop is a strange little tile laying, route building, train board game that I played probably 3 years ago now. And I just remember, like, halfway into the game, I was thinking, okay, I get it. It's okay. I'm done with this. I don't need to play this again. And, yeah, I just remember thinking that it was very much an okay game. So for this segment, I had to mention it.
That was exactly how I felt about Ex Libris, which is...
Mm-hmm.
Ex Libris was what I was really looking forward to playing. Because, so my dad, I wouldn't say collects books, but he has, like, a library that in his office that he, like... So I thought he would like playing that one with me, so I ordered it to play with him. And I thought that it was, like, a whimsical theme. It was, like, you're this librarian, but you could be, like, a gelatinous cube as a librarian. Like, if it's, like, a fantasy-themed librarian is your character, and you have, like, special abilities... And you could be like a wizard, you could be a gelatinous cube, you could be like a troll, you could be all these like wacky characters. And I thought it was neat. And it's a set collection game where you're trying to like collect books for your library. And they have these funny like titles on them too. So it just seemed like a game that would fit really well. But I played it with some friends and halfway through I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, it's fun, but it's not great. And I ended up selling the game. I didn't think my dad would actually enjoy it. It was just one of those where it was like, okay, I think I've seen like everything there is for this game. And also I thought the win condition or the tie break for win condition was really weird. If there's a tie for first and second place, third place wins.
Oh, that's really bad.
Yeah, it was just super weird. And like to this day, the people that I had played with were like, oh, you remember that time with first and second place tied? And then Paul won because he was in third place. It's like really weird. But guess who was in last? So I'm looking through games that I've played and games that I've rated on BGG. And one that came up that I actually kind of forgot about, which is another indicator, is Photosynthesis.
Oh, I never played that. Wanted to. I guess I still want to.
Again, I'd play it again, but this one's on this list for a different, slightly different reason. Photosynthesis is a game where you're playing as trees. So you are literally like a type of tree, and you are placing trees out on the board, and the board is round with like a sun dial around it, kind of, I guess. And each turn, the sun will shift, which will cast shadows from your trees, and it's not a real light, though I guess if you were crazy you could get like a lamp and move it around the board, but basically it'll change the direction of the shadows, and the trees that are in the sun will grow while the trees that are in shade will not grow. This one is on the list because it's just so much meaner than you would ever think a game like this is.
I was gonna say, I remember hearing that it was a super mean game.
It is so mean because everything you do in this game is to the detriment of somebody else. Literally everything. You cannot place a tree on the board without potentially blocking somebody else's tree from getting sun. Like, you can't do anything that doesn't hurt someone else. And to me, I don't hate Take That games, but I went into this one thinking it was just going to be like a calm, cool, like, oh, you're placing some trees and they grow type of experience. And it just kind of ended up being like, wow, I really need to be like mean to everybody in this game just to get ahead. It was kind of like a weird contrast.
It's funny because I only know of two board games where the theme is trees, mm-hmm. and they're incredibly mean games. So
the other one, Arboretum.
Exactly. Photosynthesis and Arboretum are just mean games, both called hate trees.
I actually really like Arboretum. I think I really liked it when I played it. It was mean, but like it was a quick, easy little card game, and I thought it was fun. But that's not what this episode is about.
That's right.
So get that out of here.
Take your positivity and save it for another week.
Okay.
Only mediocrity this week, man.
Only mediocrity. I'm trying to find more mediocre games. I'm a weird person because I'm the same way with movies. It's hard for me to really say like a movie is bad or okay, I'm much more likely to say something is good than something is bad or okay. So this is actually kind of a difficult category for me to put games into.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of movies,
go for it.
I just want everyone on this podcast or everyone who listens to this podcast to know that Ben has not seen Ocean's 11 or Shawshank Redemption.
I thought you were about to say, speaking of mediocrity, Ocean's 13 is absolute hot garbage. I thought
that was really bad.
But no, I think what I was about to say was that my difficulty in calling games okay or bad is what contributes to my inability to sell games or choose games to sell. I think it's just really hard for me to say it's hard for me to not find the blandest game I've ever played. In general, it's just the blandest game. The artwork, the game, like, was that the one? Because all of these, Hansa Teutonica, Marco Polo, they're all like mixing together because in their blandness. Was Hansa Teutonica the one where you and Nick were like blocking me from doing fun things for like half the game and getting more actions?
Yes.
Yes. That contributed, I think, a little bit. But yeah, artwork-wise, super bland.
Well, I don't really mind calling it there if we can't think of more mediocrity.
Well, I don't want to devolve the whole podcast into just saying, hey, this one's bland, and then not having anything to say about why. I don't think our listeners, I was about to say viewers, but you can't see us.
Maybe they look at their phone while they listen.
I'm doing the John Cena, you can't see me thing in front of my face right now. But yeah, I'm cool with that. I think those were like the big ones that sprung right to mind anyway.
Right. So. The big OKs.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ben, it's been a pleasure.
Jonah, I guess.
And yeah.
It was mediocre. It was mediocre, Jonah.
Oh, man. We're going to get all these 2.5-star reviews after this episode.
If you think that this was just okay, email jonahbenpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have any games that you think were just okay, let us know.
Yeah,
I don't think we've gotten an email yet, but, you know, maybe one day.
Tell us our games are okay. Tell us we're okay.
Yes.
It'll make us want to do even better. Thank you, Louisa, for the great music throughout, or the great music at the beginning and end now. And have a nice day, everyone else.